Welcome to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz, a candid conversation as we learn about dementia, Alzheimer's, and its effects on the people we love. Jill's years of dedication and experience help you adapt, recover, overcome obstacles, and help find a positive outcome. It's time for Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
Welcome, everybody. The holiday season is upon us, and this is a time for me personally of reflection and celebrating the Lord and Jesus's life, his birthday, and just everything that is good about this season. And because I work with people with Alzheimer's and Parkinson's disease, frontal temporal, and also Lewy body, I've invited the staff chaplain, Ryan Kahn. Hi, Ryan.
Hey, Jill.
To join me today, because I just thought it would be great to see how we can really celebrate the season and also talk about the spirituality of care for our friends with diagnosis and some of the things that they go through and the team approach that University of Colorado Hospital takes. So, Ryan, tell me what your exact job is at the hospital.
Sure, would be happy to. First of all, Jill, I thank you. Thank you for having me on your show. Appreciate this and appreciate the opportunity to share what I do at University of Colorado Hospital with your listeners and your audience. So as a staff chaplain, as part of the neuropalliative team at University, my role on the team is really to help engage and process how the diagnosis is impacting folks socially, psychologically, emotionally, spiritually, relationally, socially, because our physicians get it. A significant diagnosis, a neurological one, like dementia or Alzheimer's or whatever it happens to be, not only impacts patients physically, and physicians will work with medications, treatment modalities, therapies, certainly whatever's in their wisdom and arsenal to help improve their quality of life, help them manage these symptoms. It also affects patients in all those other dimensions I mentioned, as well as their families, members, and caregivers. So I kind of come in to help process those concerns, and I have a strategy in a way about doing that. I'll sometimes focus on issues relating to coping, emotions, feelings that are coming up for patients and family members. I'll also kind of ask them, what are their concerns? What are the issues they'd like to address? And they could be in, again, physical, emotional, social, spiritual, mental.
Right. So let's expand on this just a little bit. So you work with Dr. Binzi Kluger.
Correct.
And his team, several other people on that team as well. Do you work with Samantha Holden and Christina Vaughn? And
I do. I work with Dr.
Pressman.
Okay. I've worked with all of them. Well, I have not directly worked with Dr. Pressman yet. But I am expanding my the possibilities.
Okay.
So I have worked alongside Dr. Holden and Dr. Christina Vaughn and work with Dr. Benzi Kluger and Dr. Vaughn regularly.
Okay. So what I believe they've been trying to accomplish over the past couple of years is a more well-rounded approach for the entire family so that they can hit on everything, not just the neurology and the pathology of these diseases and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, for example, they brought me in to give caregiver classes, which you attended one recently, which is great. And then your job is to really help people process what's happening to them and not necessarily give them answers, but help to lead them down a path where they can maybe find their own answers or find their own peace with whatever their diagnosis is or whatever they're living with as a family. Is that a fair statement?
That is. That's part of what I do. And so the team consists, just to summarize, of a physician, a nurse, a social worker, and a chaplain, really the four main components of the team. We will sometimes include a pharmacist and other specialties, but those four members sort of round out the team approach. And you're exactly right, Jill. Helping patients and family members strategize new ways of coping, managing emotions and feelings, navigating difficult interpersonal dynamics and relationships, whether it's to improve communication, whether it's to reduce stress, whether it's to not only expand their external sort of network of support, but also helping them to sort of explore and reinforce their internal sources of coping. Because many people have, we like to believe that many people have inside of them the ability to sort of cope with these issues. Mm-hmm. And what we do is help to sort of draw that out and help to help them to see it, put some words around it, and help them to refine it and build some habits and practices around self-care as well as around coping.
I love mm-hmm. that. Can you give me sort of an example?
Sure, sure. Well, so for instance, one of the things that I like to talk about, and let me kind of focus on a more spiritual, overtly spiritual kind of issue.
Okay.
That my other team members may not necessarily discuss, the use of prayer, the use of meditation.
Right.
These are historically very spiritual kind of practices,
mm-hmm.
And many people, even if they are not necessarily overtly spiritual, or they don't sort of aligned to a faith tradition and don't use prayer, they will many times be open to meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And meditation and prayer have very common similarities. What people are doing is helping to draw inwardly to
right.
their fears, their concerns, their stressors, put some words and organization around all the confusing emotions that they're feeling on the inside. As they bring some organization to it, they can release that to God. They can release that to in their own mind, perhaps,
mm-hmm.
in a meditative form. If, for instance, God is not particularly important to them, they can find ways to sort of use meditation in non-overtly spiritual ways. Deep, slow breathing, progressive muscle relaxation. These are sort of the common tenets of meditation. And people meditate and pray for various reasons. They can sometimes want to focus on a specific issue or concern or stressor that's bothering them.
Mm-hmm.
They can sometimes just want to clear their mind or open the space of their mind to sort of allow insight to kind of flow in to get a new perspective, a fresh perspective on their situation. Or people can just sit quietly just as a stress-reducing activity.
Right.
So, just,
well, you have mm-hmm. such a easygoing manner about you.
Thanks.
And, you know, we're dealing with some really difficult diseases.
Yeah, they are.
And families struggle so much with Alzheimer's, losing the people that they love, and Parkinson's disease especially, and that's mm-hmm. Dr. Kluger's area of expertise. And even Louie Boddy with Samantha Holden, Dr. Samantha Holden's area of expertise. And, you know, when they're in the earlier stages, that's where a lot more of these, I don't want to say issues, but where they start questioning, why me? Why did this happen to me? And,
absolutely.
You know, I'd be interested to hear, not anybody specific, but just mm-hmm. some specific circumstances where somebody said, you know, I've done everything right all my life. I've gone to church. I've been good to people. I volunteered. Yeah. I went to college. I learned.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't go to college, and I worked hard and earned my way. Why did I get Parkinson's disease?
Yeah.
Why did I get Alzheimer's? When we come back in our second segment in just a minute, I'd like to kind of explore that a little bit. And how do you help people through the per se why me's of all this? You know, we don't want to be mm-hmm. introspective in a way that is selfish or anything like that. But I imagine a lot of people will ask that question.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So we'll come back in just a minute after a word from our sponsor, and we'll have that discussion, okay?
Sounds good.
Hey, friends. I'm excited to tell you about Pine Grove Crossing Assisted Living and Memory Care in Parker, Colorado. They set the bar high for person-centered care. They're locally owned, and they focus on exceeding their residents' expectations while providing excellent dining, housekeeping, and transportation services. Their care team with licensed nurses are available 16 hours per day, 7 days a week, to ensure clinical needs are addressed as soon as possible. Check them out at pinegrovecrossing.com or 303-996-8000 and see how care goes into everything they do.
It's time for Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
Okay, we are back, and I'm with Ryan Kahn. He is the staff chaplain in the, Neurology Supportive and Palliative Care Clinic at University of Colorado Hospital. And those folks over there, Ryan, are near and dear to my heart. Because my whole show is, I call it dementia resilience because I wanted to really gather in the different types of dementia that people could deal with. Mm-hmm. My area of expertise is Alzheimer's and Lewy body, Parkinson's disease, and frontotemporal. And so I know you work closely with a lot of those areas, but your basic focus is the Parkinson's area or not?
All of them.
All of them.
Okay. Yeah, we just finished a clinical study with with Parkinson's patients, and so we focused on a large population of Parkinson's patients in the last 3 years. But we've engaged folks of with all kinds of neurological diagnoses.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So one of the hard things is that any of these diseases, they don't have a cure.
Yeah.
And I don't envy your job when one of your docs gives them a diagnosis that is game-changing.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And, you know, I come in and I try to give them communication skills to live well and overcome obstacles and adversity. But you go much deeper. You're going into their heart and their soul, right?
Sure. I'm often engaging in very challenging emotional, relational, existential questions.
Right. Sure. And so have you ever had them say, has God forgotten about me? Like, you know, why me? I'm sorry to put you on the spot
that's fine.
But I've just, you know, I just wonder.
Oh, yeah. So, Jill, absolutely. That comes up, not too infrequently. It comes up enough times that I've been able to engage it with a variety of patients.
Mm-hmm.
And we're entering into sort of life's deepest cave in a way.
Right. It's a good way to put it. Yeah.
Well, these are some deep questions.
Yeah.
We hurt deeply. Many of us have experienced, and what we're really asking is an existential question about fairness. When people kind of ask the question, well, why is this happening to me? What they're really asking is the universe fair?
Right.
Is God?
That's a good way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah. Is God really fair?
Right.
And that's really the underlying question and underlying issue. It's a question of it's a question of the moral reality of the universe or the moral reality of God.
Mm-hmm.
Why is this really fair? I approach it in a lot of different ways. I could give you a long answer or a short answer. I'll try to let me try to give you some, as best as I can, some responses to this, to these very difficult and challenging questions. First of all, let me kind of set as a stage that depending on what faith tradition people are emerging from, they're going to sort of tackle or respond to these questions of suffering differently.
Right.
Let me kind of focus on the Judeo-Christian perspective for a little bit of time, but I certainly can also engage in other perspectives, whether that's Buddhist or Hindu or Muslim or other faith traditions.
Okay,
I think from the Judeo-Christian perspective, one helpful question to sort of ponder is okay. Just because life is unfair, and life is unfair. There's a lot of things that happen to people. It has nothing to do with their performance. It has nothing to do with what they've done. God is not punishing them, necessarily. And just because life is unfair, does that also equate to God being unfair?
Right.
It's a very kind of fair question to ask theologically.
Sure.
And I think the questions towards God are very fair too, which is, you know, why me?
Mm-hmm.
I've been so good. I've been whatever it happens to be. That I just don't feel like this is fair to me. So many people of the Judeo-Christian faith believe that God's goodness and God's power can be held together in tension over sort of the unfairness of what's happening to them.
Mm-hmm.
And so many folks kind of, as they wander through that dark path, can find their way out or find their peace with it.
Right.
Recognizing that, in the midst of something really tragic or horrible that's happened to me, I can still find solace and encouragement and comfort from God.
Okay. And what about other faiths?
Yeah. So let's just take a let's go a little bit deeper. So if you take a look at sort of the humanist or naturalism, you know, many people believe that unfortunate bad things are just generally random. Mm-hmm. They may have a biopsychosocial environmental cause grounded in the natural realm.
Mm-hmm.
They have a natural feature of our, they're a natural feature of our human condition, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
They have natural or moral evils. Fairness and unfairness are at best kind of relative characteristics in that sense.
Right.
You know, for Eastern traditions, you know, many kind of Eastern faiths, whether that's Hindu or Buddhism, and again, I'm broad-basing these.
Sure.
Because even within those faith traditions, there are variations.
Right.
They kind of tend to view undeserved suffering as a result of a cosmic law of moral cause and effect. They, you know, many Buddhists believe in the first two noble truths. One of those truths is that suffering is caused by unhealthy attachments to worldly things.
Interesting.
They could be things like unhealthy attachments to material objects or even unhealthy attachments to relationships.
What a different perspective, right? I never really thought about it that way.
Yeah, they can also be, right, they can also be attachments to, for instance, greed, hatred, ignorance, and so forth and so on. Sometimes you also hear in Eastern religions and Eastern faiths that there is a sort of impact of one's past life experiences. So that, for instance, unless those past life experiences are somehow mitigated in your present life, they can return as more suffering. That's kind of karma. What goes around kind of comes around is a common phrase that you'll hear in our culture.
Right.
It'll come around to you. And some people believe in reincarnation, believe that it does come back to you in a future life.
Well, having said that, you have to wear about a zillion hats.
I mean,
I've never heard of such a job where you have to troubleshoot. Well, I'm going to tell you where I stand on it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, this is strange to say, but I feel like the people in my family that have had this diagnosis, my grandfather, his sister, my mom's side, she had 4 siblings out of 10 that mm-hmm. have had this diagnosis. And I have a brother with frontal temporal. And I feel like I was supposed to do something with this.
Mm.
Does that make sense? This happened to my family because I'm supposed to do something with this. And I've taken it and run with it. So I worked at the Alzheimer's Association for many years, mm-hmm. and we called that, and with related disorders. And then now my own company that I have, and even just this radio show, because I want to be able to reach people all over. So I put this on podcasts. I don't know if you know that, but I put this on podcasts. And right now I have listeners in 21 countries and 34
wow.
states.
It's fantastic.
And
yeah.
it blows my mind that on the different podcast entities that this goes out to, not just on Easy 1430, that I try to tell people all the time, I want to help them, and I think this is what God wanted me to do. If that doesn't mm-hmm. sound silly, I just think that's what it wanted me to do.
Yeah.
So we're going to take a break. We'll be back and we'll have more of this conversation with Ryan Kahn.
Living and working with Alzheimer's and other dementias can often be challenging. Summit Resilience Training provides education utilizing non-medical approaches for those who work with our friends affected by dementia. Believing families still need one-on-one assistance, we provide classes which help them understand the diseases affecting their loved ones, offering strategies and techniques for success with activities of daily living and working with confusing behaviors. We offer in-home assessments to clarify symptoms of dementia diseases and help families work together to find moments of joy while living with memory loss and impairment. Education programs instilling person-centered care philosophies are offered for professional caregivers working in communities and homes, which can be customized for their staff. Training is also available for first responders, such as law enforcement, fire, and EMT personnel. We are passionate that people with dementias, such as Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and others, are approached with compassion and understanding, and those who work with them have all the tools they need for success. Call us at Summit Resilience Training, 303-420-6988, to schedule a class or in-home assessment. Visit our website at summitresiliencetraining.com for more information.
It's time for Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
Okay, I'm back. And because it's Christmas time and this show is going to air on Christmas Eve, I think. I really hope that this show today kind of opens your eyes to some ideas around the spirituality of maybe living resiliently with some type of diagnosis that is out of your hands. And, you know, I know, folks, it's really tough when you've got an Alzheimer's or Parkinson's or one of the other diagnoses, but I want everybody to overcome obstacles and adversity to try to find a positive outcome the best way that you can. I want you to live well, even with these diagnoses. Try not to struggle with them. So Ryan Kahn, you're with me. You're the staff chaplain at the University of Colorado Hospital, and you work with the neurology department. You work with my people. I call my friends with diagnosis and my caregiver nation, they are my listeners. Okay, mm-hmm. So caregiver nation are my caregivers that take care of our friends with diagnosis.
Sure.
So your thoughts on the holiday season?
Yeah. You know, speaking specifically to maybe, you know, the holidays bring up a lot of feelings for obviously a lot of people.
Right.
Because they are saturated with deep memories, moments in time that they've shared with their loved ones, especially, you know, those that are experiencing now a memory loss and significant cognitive decline.
Right.
They can't, you know, it's much more difficult to sort of share you know, the full sense of the holidays in one degree with them, because they, you know, they cognitively just can't be with them in the same places that they used to be, in the same sort of conversations.
Right.
So that can bring up a lot of grief, understandably, because they see their loved one losing a sort of sense of themselves,
right,
which is really hard. I think, finding appropriate ways and healthy ways to sort of process your grief, talk about it with others, you know, have a good cry if that's helpful.
There you go.
And again, talking about it with someone is one of the best things that you can do. And people, you know, grieve differently. I like to think of grief not just as losing a loved one, but it's all the different ways in which we grieve, such as the losses of one's sense to self, the loss of independence, the loss of vitality, the loss of mobility, the loss of communication, the loss of, you know, the ability to do things you used to enjoy. Those are all, if you think about all those losses, they can accumulate and pile up,
mm-hmm,
in what we would call sort of an accumulated sense of grief,
right,
that people can experience and may need to process. And again, I want to really emphasize that people grieve differently. Some are very expressive. Some kind of hold it on the inside. And however, which way in which you grieve,
so
give yourself, you know, space and grace for that. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to expand, mm-hmm, on that just a little bit, because my phone rings off the hook,
mm-hmm,
from really around Thanksgiving,
yeah,
to in the new year. And families are coming home, seeing loved ones in advanced states of memory loss and cognitive, mm-hmm, impairment. And my big worry is depression for families.
Sure.
And that grief you're talking about, some depression around that. I unfortunately had a friend who committed suicide on New Year's Eve last year, and I miss her terribly. And it was all wrapped around a family member with a devastating disease.
Mm-hmm.
So your advice to them, talk it out,
yeah,
have a good cry, but get back in the game. What do you say?
Yeah.
What do you say?
Sure. I think the best thing to do is listen. I love what theologian Paul Tillich said. He said, the first duty of love is to listen.
Oh, yeah.
And
I like it.
And I think that's your first response, mm-hmm, is as a loved one, as a family member. Just surround those folks. Listen. Don't need to feel like you have to rush in with answers. May not be any answers that are going to help.
That's an excellent point.
Yeah. And what they really just need is your presence,
mm-hmm,
your caring, loving presence and a listening ear as they vent, as they sort it through and maybe talk it through with you.
Right.
Sure, you can offer some helpful responses along the way when they feel appropriate in the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And we hope and trust that people will regain their footing and regain their sense of, getting back into the game of, okay, we've got to make the best of this. How do I do that?
Mm-hmm.
Rather than make this into a, I've heard some people say, rather than make this into a death sentence, make this into a life sentence.
Right.
You know, and so just borrowing a phrase from another patient. So, I mean, there are ways to sort of slowly, yeah, re-engage and find meaning and purpose, joy and happiness in life,
mm-hmm.
even though it has been limited and even though it has been dramatically adjusted and adapted and altered. There is still potential in life, and that's kind of what we help to draw out for people at the clinic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think that's fantastic, and it really works. I mean, in 2017, I was at a big conference that Dr. Kluger put on for the Friends with Parkinson's, and they were up dancing, and I'm always amazed at the resiliency that people that with the Parkinson's diagnosis live with,
absolutely.
You know, working mind over matter
mm-hmm.
and exercise to help kind of stave off some of their symptoms. It won't cure anything, but I mean, bicycle riding, dancing,
yeah.
boxing, all those kinds of things that help them get through it.
Absolutely.
I wish our friends with Alzheimer's would kind of adopt that same thing, but I can say that the families who try to just love their loved one
mm-hmm.
And really try to just make the most of every day and have a calm, compassionate approach to the mm-hmm. way they're working with them seem to do a little better.
They sure do, yeah. And it's a combination of not only, again, strengthening those internal sort of coping mechanisms, and they could vary. They could be mental, spiritual kind of practices, relational practices. There's also those external sort of sources of coping, which
mm-hmm.
is, you know, they're you know, many, many complementary practices and alternative activities that one can engage in. And it's not just prayer and meditation, Tai Chi, yoga, boxing, as you mentioned,
mm-hmm.
Volunteering, absolutely, all kinds of different things. Yeah.
Well, I loved having you on the show today because, like I said, it's Christmas time.
Yeah.
You know, there's just a lot of things going on, and I think if families can just take a minute and breathe and really just try very hard to find that peaceful place in their mind so that they can help their person that they love get through the holidays and
yeah.
and talk to their clergy, talk to the people that can help them with some spiritual guidance. Could make all the difference in the world, right?
Absolutely. Not only do we empathize, and what I mean by empathize is feel into their situation to help sort of bolster their coping and bring them comfort.
Mm-hmm.
I'd also like to say, because it's Christmas time, that God also empathizes with them in the unfairness, in the injustice, in the suffering that they experience. You know,
mm-hmm.
being this is Christmas time, you know, many Christians believe that God sort of intimately shares in the unfair suffering and sort of took the incarnate bodily form
right.
And sort of voluntarily subjected himself to mm-hmm. unfairness in the midst of the Christmas by taking on a body.
Right.
And so there is some kind of solace in that for Christians that, especially around Christmas time, if you probe the deep theological depth of that.
I don't think you could have said that any better. Well, Ryan, it's been great having you on the show today. God bless everybody out there. My prayers and my family's prayers are with all of you. And thank you for what you do, Ryan.
Oh,
you're
no,
awesome.
Thank you, Jill, for having me. Appreciate it.
I'd love to have you on again sometime soon, okay?
Sure.
Take care.
Okay, you too.
You've been listening to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz. Visit her website at summitresiliencetraining.com to learn more and join us next week as we learn more about dementia, Alzheimer's, and overcoming obstacles with a positive outcome. See you next time.